And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. Just 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday morning, the 15th of August 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. I do hope you're very well indeed. Plenty coming up over the next 3 hours. Coming up after 10 o'clock, of course, Community Garda information, where we'll bring you the latest appeals and information from Angarda Síochána, kind of that and so much more besides. So don't go anywhere. Your calls and comments welcome into us right now. WhatsApps and texts. If there's an issue you wish to raise, a topic you want to discuss, some information you wish to pass on, or indeed if you want to play a request for someone special in your life, 086 60 25000, the WhatsApp and text number. You can also obviously text and WhatsApp us from outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. If you're listening in Derry, Tyrone, Lanzarote, the Cayman Islands, we've got people all over the place. If you want to give us a call, of course, 07491 25000, same again, 00353 74 91 25000. Any emails from anywhere also, comments@highlandradio.com. Right, the Donegal Democrat this morning, a man charged with murdering another man in southwest Donegal has been remanded in custody with a book of evidence expected to be served next month. Alan Vile appeared at Letterkenny District Court on Thursday afternoon via video link from Castlereagh Prison. The 38-year-old has been charged with the murder of Robert Wilkin, whose body was found floating in waters off Slieve League on July 3rd. Vile's solicitor, Mr. Patsy Gallagher, said his client consented to the matter being adjourned to September the 4th. On to the Nationals. We'll start with the Mail this morning. Number of young adults still living at home almost doubled in the past decade. Do you have your adults? I was going to say your young ones, but it could be anyone now at this stage now. Do you have them back home? Do you have them living at home? Is it good? Is it working for you? Are you glad? Or the stage of your life where you would hope that they're out on their own and you have a little bit more privacy or independence or whatever you might call it? Well, more and more adults are living at home now. The scale of Ireland's housing crisis is laid bare by new figures showing the number of young adults still living with their parents has almost doubled in the past decade, and young men are less likely to leave the family home compared to their female counterparts, according to new data from Eurostar. The latest figures show that 68% of Irish adults aged between 25 and 29 were still living at home last year. Now, is it truly because they can't get a property? Is it because they can't find somewhere to rent? Or are they enjoying home cooking? What's your experience? Maybe it's something that you're indifferent to. Maybe, as I say, it's something that you're really pleased about, or maybe it's something that you're quietly upset about. Feel free to share your views confidentially with us to 086 60 25000. Well, 68% of Irish adults, as I mentioned, aged between 25 and 29 were still living at home. That compares to an EU average of 42%, so it's 50% higher, not insignificant. For women in this age group, 61% have yet to move out, while almost three quarters, 74% of men, have yet to fly the nest. However, a decade ago, just 36% of those aged 25 to 29 were still living with their parents. So, as I say, is that something that's working for you or something that you would like to see change? Let us know. Share your views with us. The front of the Irish Times this morning. You just heard some commentary on this during the news bulletin. Police in Northern Ireland are confident the information released in last week's major data breach is in the hands of dissident Republicans. Chief Constable Simon Byrne said yesterday it was now a planning assumption that they will use this list to generate fear and uncertainty as well as intimidate or target officers and staff, he added. Now, all of these aren't based in Northern Ireland. I'm sure there are a number based in Donegal that aren't too happy with this information being released and are uncertain now about their security. The Police Service of Northern Ireland chief was speaking after data appearing to be from the leak was posted on a wall opposite the Sinn Féin office on the Falls Road in West Belfast. Sinn Féin MLA and Policing Board spokesperson Gerry Kelly said it compromised approximately 3 to 4 A4 pages of the leaked document, but with the names of officers removed. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. Big crisis in teaching in this country. And, you know, there was perhaps a summer to actively go out and go to these foreign destinations where so many of our young teachers are teaching now and say, look, come home. We've got some full-time jobs for you here and maybe sweeten the package for them a little. I'm not sure if that happened or not, but as it stands now, we've got 1,200 teaching jobs vacant. This is unbelievable, really, when you think of it. School principals across the country are scrambling to fill almost, as I mentioned, 1,200 vacant teaching jobs just weeks before the new term begins. The recruitment crisis is particularly acute in Dublin, where the high cost of housing and a shortage of supplies forcing teachers to leave the capital. New figures show there are now 1,170 vacancies at primary and second level nationwide, with almost half of the on-staff teaching positions, 528 in Dublin. Well, they're not fleeing Dublin to find the jobs in the rural communities or they would be filled, so they're going somewhere else. Principals say they are down to the wire as they frantically compete to try to fill posts. Karen Jordan of St. Catherine's National School in Dublin City said, "The teacher shortage is very real and is the worst I've seen it in my 7 years as principal." I read these stories and then you chat to people out or they message you who are teachers struggling to get some permanency or to get positions. And I always struggle to square that circle. Maybe if you're out there and that's relevant to you, you might be able to share some information with us and give us an understanding. Or maybe that information is outdated now at this stage and there are simply more posts than there are teachers. We don't know the extent of vacancies in Donegal, however. Let us see, what should we go to next? The Irish Daily Star and former Minister Ivan Yates has weighed into the RTE controversy. He says he believes RTE will run out of cash by December and will be in need of a state bailout. And the opinionated ex-minister, as he's described, said the broadcaster was heading for a financial crisis because it has borrowed 95 million of its 100 million limit and fears for the 1,800 staff working there. The former Tonight Show host also weighed in on Ryan Tubridy's potential return to the station, saying he needs RTE more than RTE needs him, admitting anyone can talk poo for an hour. And I've said that on this programme before. That is a slot that you could put a talking clock in and you would record 200,000-300,000 listeners. It's just the way it is. So I would agree with him. I don't often, but I would agree with him that Ryan Tubridy definitely needs RTE more than he or it needs him. And also, as I said in the show yesterday, in the nothing against Mr. Tubridy, he's probably a decent family man. I'm sure he is, actually. If they are looking to get rid of a toxic culture, he has become that poster boy for it. For right or wrong, it's just he's part of this whole controversy. And I just don't see a way he eases back into that slot without that toxicity following him in there. Not to mention, it's still not clear whether or not the staff that may feel unfairly treated would be very willing to work with him. Opening up about the RTE pay scandal, Ivan said, "I think the public are missing the point here. With each passing week, the whole debate about Ryan Tubridy is deck chairs on the Titanic. It is now facing a cash shortfall of 50 million. I believe RTE is now technically insolvent. They were borrowing. They have borrowings of 95 million. But there is a playing field out there that we're in. News Talk are in, Today FM are in. They don't get any license fees money and continuing to provide a service. I don't think that comment is going to make people feel sorry for RTE and want to pay their TV license if they have already decided that they don't want to. The Irish Sun today: it is time to manage the banks after they failed to pass on interest rate hikes to savers, the chair of the Oireachtas Finance Committee has said. Fianna Fáil TD John McGuinness suggested bank levies should be increased as a threat to the banks for not passing on hikes to savers fast enough. He also urged the government to threaten the institutions with sanctions if they don't comply. What I don't understand is, and maybe it's not in the gift of the government, but why is no one calling for the vulture funds to be sanctioned and hit with heavy levies to try and offer better value or lower interest rates to Irish mortgage holders who are stuck with them? And I mean particularly those who have defective concrete homes. Are the vulture funds beyond the scope of levies? And if they aren't beyond the scope of levies, why isn't the likes of the chair of the Oireachtas Finance Committee not imploring the government to levy them to the point whereby they stop gouging people who are already going through an absolute nightmare? Now, the problem the banks will say is if they, and this is separate to the vulture funds, the problem the banks will say is that they will argue that, well, if we want to maintain our profits at some level, so if we increase interest on savings, we're going to have to start rolling out interest rate hikes on mortgages. They have already, but not to the level they possibly could. So I hope in their actions that they don't hit those who are struggling to pay their mortgage in an attempt to get more interest rates for themselves on their savings. Because let's face it, is there anyone in the Dáil that doesn't have significant savings that would benefit from an interest rate hike? I would suggest not. I would say most of them must have, or else they're not very good with their money. We would just want to make sure that in their efforts to insist the banks do that, that they don't then at the same time give the banks the free rein to increase further mortgage interest rates, which will hit those that don't have the luxury of €100,000 plus salary. So I just do hope they do get it right. The Irish Daily Mirror, following on from a story we read out yesterday, they have the comments of a leading priest. He said the church needs to urgently look at accepting female or married priests as existing clergy are dying on their feet. Because this out of Galway yesterday, we heard that, and we've heard it from this county and this region as well, there is a reduction. The number of priests is falling. And inevitably, this is going to lead to issues in terms of funerals, christenings, all that type of stuff. And we have one priest here, Father Paddy Byrne, saying that the Catholic Church needs to accept female or married priests. Is that something you would be in favour of? Have you had an issue with it? Now, of course, if you don't really care, you're not a practising Catholic or you're not a Catholic and you don't go to church, it probably doesn't matter as much. But if you are a regular churchgoer and you can see yourself things are changing, is it time the church changed and said, OK, married priests and females should be able to do the job? What do you think? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Well, Father Paddy Byrne added, this is nothing new or radical. Pope Francis is asking us to embrace the signs of the times. The Port Leash-based cleric said the church must take accountability for the vocation crisis. He added, we have a responsibility to perhaps put our hands up as the church and say, well, actually, unfortunately, we got to this point by failing to listen to the people on the ground. I think, though, there is a significant, I don't know how strong it is or not, group of people that says the church needs to be consolidated. You know, that if people aren't going, or maybe it needs to be compacted, stick to its laurels, not bow or change or swerve to try and suit modern life, that it sticks to its guns, and if it becomes smaller, so be it, but it retains its core principles, and if that means less priests, that means less priests. That's one view. Father Paddy there clearly, obviously, doesn't share that view. But what is your view? That's the question I have for you. 086 6025000 or call us on 074 91 25000. Dara Fleming is a digital communications and content lead with A Lust for Life and a mental health blogger. And he joins us, shortly. I beg your pardon. We'll come back to Dara in a moment. But I'll get to some of your comments before we do from yesterday, because the show was very busy yesterday and I didn't get to all of them. A caller says there are people out there that could buy the lady's wheelchair that he had on yesterday. So let's see who is still a good person in this country and do the right thing. I wish to God I had the money and would not even give it a second thought by giving this person her dream. Ree Gardy with tattoos. This listener says, I'm sure back in the days before the David Beckham tattoo phenomenon, had he stopped someone with a tattoo, I'm sure he would have asked more questions from that person, because image back then told stories in the mind. But we're not back then. Things are different now. Hi, Greg. Unfortunately, regardless of the frequency of tattoos in the modern era, present confrontational training would dictate that they can be antagonising regardless. I know some fine individuals with tattoos, but it is the individual customer person whom they deal with. P.S. Always remember a man in his 60s with wrinkled, faded tattoos wishing they'd never got them. That comes in from Oshin. All right, that's one way of looking at it. Right, back to more of those comments in the not too distant. Dara Fleming, as I mentioned, is joining us. He's a digital communications and content lead with A Lust for Life and a mental health blogger. Good morning to you, Dara. How are you getting on?
Good morning. How are you? I'm good.
Now, we read that 1 in 10 adults between the ages of 18 and 37 have been a victim of intimate image abuse, according to a 2021 survey, and it's increasingly happening more often to men. This means it's likely that several people you know has had this happen to them. but can't talk about it due to shame and stigma. But Dara, you found yourself in this position under this threat, and you decided to take a different route. Tell us the background to the story.
Yeah, so it's about 2 weeks ago now. I was basically made a victim of this, and it came about because I matched someone on a dating app called Hinge. We were chatting, just getting to know each other. Pictures were exchanged, and then it was revealed that the person I was talking to wasn't the person I was talking to, and it was actually a scam artist looking for €2,000 in exchange for not leaking my photos, which I refused to pay, and blocked them on everything. And eventually, they left me alone. And even since that's happened, several people have got in touch saying it's happening to them now. It's happened to them in the past, and, you know, looking for kind of advice on what to do. And, like, it's not like I'm an expert in this, bar my own experience, but I think the main thing is to don't pay these people, because as soon as you pay them, they keep coming back asking for more, and they bombard you with messages, and they just kind of plague your existence. And then, yeah, I guess for me, because I didn't have control over the images anymore, I wanted to take back some sort of control. So that's why I started tweeting about it. The tweets subsequently kind of went viral. A lot of people knew about it. A lot of news organizations picked it up. And now I've kind of become, I suppose, and not involuntary, but like it just has happened that I am now talking about it publicly to hopefully help people, because a lot of people do end up taking their own lives, and it can be very, very traumatic and cause a lot of mental health problems. So I'm just trying to talk about it as much as I can in the hope that we can help people get through what is an incredibly challenging experience.
And before we get to how people deal with it if they find themselves in this situation, has it given you pause for thought on sharing in intimate images? Like, are you advising people to think twice about that, or if you know what I mean? Like, I think it's an awful lot more common than people might imagine. You know, if you weren't inclined to do it, it might seem like the craziest thing anyone could do, right? But you know, I'm sure a lot of people don't see it as a problem.
Yeah, I suppose it's a generational thing. Like, anyone who's a millennial or Gen Z or below, it's pretty much the most normal part of it is a normal part of dating in the modern world. But I can understand it probably seems absolutely bizarre for anyone older than that. But yeah, like my learning is that I'm not going to be sending those types of images anymore, and especially, like, you know, you're sending them to people you think you can trust, and then those people are betraying that trust. So it doesn't come down to like, oh, I'm not sending them to the wrong people, I'm just not sending them to people because there's no point in taking that risk anymore. Not that I would say it's my fault that they've been leaked, because, you know, the crime was committed against me, it's the person's fault, but at the same time, you can lower the risk by not sending them.
Do you think the scammer ever has any intention ever in these cases of actually releasing the images, or do they presume that they hit on people? Maybe they're in a relationship, maybe they're a member of the Gardaí, maybe they're a judge, or maybe they're just incredibly shy. Do you think that they're banking on people not taking the risk? Like, do you think that these scammers actually do publish these photos? I presume they end up posted somewhere, but, you know, as part of this blackmail scam.
I imagine in certain contexts they do, but I'd say, like, this one felt very much like, because the man in question was based in Nigeria, that it's a scam firm, like, and I've been thinking about it and having conversations a lot, and what I've kind of concluded is that leaking the pictures actually is bad for business, for want of a better phrase, because if it becomes very normal for people's nudes to be leaked online, then we'd be seeing people's nudes left, right and centre. And that would make it normal for people's nudes to be leaked, which would take the sting out of the threat of leaking them. Because it'd be like, oh, Dara's nudes were leaked and nothing bad happened to him, so if mine are leaked, it'll be fine, and then people won't be paying. It's the threat that has the power, and that's when people pay. But if it becomes a thing where nudes are being leaked all the time, then that threat won't have the same power.
What was the nature of the exchanges, you know, in the early stages? So obviously, once they had obtained these intimate photos of you, Do you believe the language from there was automated, or was it someone you know ranking or ramping up the threat to try and get you to pay? How did that play out, the back and forth, before you eventually blocked them?
So after they got the images, it was quite sinister. Like, so they text me the images on Snapchat, and they said I had 10 seconds to tell them to stop, and then they quite condescendingly started counting down from 10 in text. So I told them to stop, and then this person actually rang me via Snapchat.
Uh-huh.
From the girl's Snapchat, who I thought I was texting, and it was a man's voice. And he said, you have it really nice in Ireland, you have nice jobs, you've good money, I want some of that money, it's not that good here in Nigeria. Then I said, that's not my fault, why are you making me, the victim of this? And then he said, you're going to pay 2,000. I said, I don't have 2,000 euro. He asked me how much I could afford. I said 500. He started laughing and said, that's not enough. Then he asked me if I had Bitcoin. I said, no. Then he was quite annoyed at this. He was like, hey, don't you have Bitcoin? I just said, I just don't have Bitcoin. And then he said, okay, you're going to have to get Bitcoin and you're going to have to download this app. And once he started saying that, I hung up.
Mm.
And he rang back immediately and was very angry. He was like, why did you hang up on me? Don't hang up on me again. And I said, oh, I thought you told me to hang up on you. Then he started going on about some app again. I blocked him again. Or I hung up again. Then I blocked him on Snapchat. Then he messaged me through Instagram from a burner account saying, I'll reduce the price to 500. Your photos are being uploaded now. This is your last chance. Let's settle this with peace. I don't want to ruin your life. Be a good man. Do the right thing. And then I blocked him again. And that was kind of the last I heard from him. Now, I have subsequently heard of people who had paid the initial fee.
Wow.
And when that happens, they're far more invasive. Like, they message you off.
Well, they've got a hold of you at that point because they know that you're. And was there ever a price that you would have paid early on? I mean, obviously, it's been a whole learning process since. But at the beginning, if he'd have said 50 euro, would you send it? I wonder.
Like, when he said 2,000, and I counter-offered with 500. If he'd said yes to that. Because of the panic I was feeling, the walls were like closing in. I couldn't think. I probably would have paid that, and that would have been a terrible mistake to make. So it was lucky that he said 500 was okay. Maybe like 40 minutes after the initial contact, because I had calmed down a bit, and I could kind of start thinking again. So yeah, 500 I probably would have paid because I could have afforded it. It was just that his price point initially was too high that I couldn't have afforded it anyway. So I was lucky in that sense. Like, it wasn't this level-headed, I knew exactly what I was doing move. It was very much, I just can't afford this price.
Yeah. So, Dara, obviously, you've used this opportunity. You took the decision to go public with it. But in this day and age as well, that in and of itself puts you out there. And, there's a lot, you talked about an anonymity. There's a lot of anonymous accounts out there on social media and what have you. What has been the response? I mean, obviously, you've been platformed and you've had the opportunity to get the information out there, and I think that's really good. But has it exposed you to any other elements of social media that you weren't expecting, like people saying, oh, it's your fault, or nasty messages or whatever? Have you received any of that?
Yeah, to be fair, for the most part, it has been extremely positive and supportive, and people reaching out to see if I'm okay. There has been elements of shaming, sometimes from trolls, sometimes from real people. The editor of the Irish Medical Times, for one, was shaming me publicly on Twitter. And what's probably the most surprising is that a lot of young women have been shaming me and telling me it's my own fault and victim blaming. And that's surprising just in the context of the world we live in, where we're very much against victim blaming when it comes to sexual assault against women, as we should be. But there are, not a majority of young women by any means, but a certain amount of young women have been victim blaming me for this happening, which just seems inappropriate in the world we live in now. So it does happen. I mean, I knew when I was going public, it would happen. Like it, like anything you put on social media, there are going to be a lot of people who are on your side, and there are going to be some people who...
It's just a very, very complicated world now. There's just no right, wrong, black, white, whatever way you want to describe it. It's just, you know, you put it out there. You put yourself out there on any subject, and there will be those that try and take you down. Okay, Dara, listen, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. I hope you're getting on all okay, and hopefully these images don't pop up anyway, because it is your own private self, and it wouldn't be nice for anyone. All right, take care of yourself.
Thanks.
Have a good one. Dara Fleming there, digital communications and content lead with The Lust for Life and mental health blogger, 086 60 25000. WhatsApps and texts to that number on that issue. Maybe you've been a victim of such a scam. It'd be hard to know what to do in that situation. There was a point he says, yeah, I would have paid. Right, back to the issue of tattoos and Gardaí. Tattoos are a sign of low intelligence, believes a listener. I'm sure that's not the case at all. Another, totally agree, tattoos are yuck. Hidden under clothes is one thing, but would I take a guard serious if he had tattoos all over his face? Would I feel safe if he came to my door? Not sure I would. I think the tattoos over the face thing is maybe, you don't see that very often. It is very, very rare. But we were kind of talking more about tattoos on the forearms. As far as I'm aware, Aer Lingus don't allow tattoos on cabin crew. Apparently Aer Lingus now recently have only just done away with being able to compel women to wear high heels. A caller says, the reason we shouldn't feed seagulls... We had a texter in yesterday that says, look, and referenced the Bible and saying, it's good to feed seagulls, you should do it. This caller says, the reason we shouldn't feed seagulls is because it's rewarding unwanted behaviour. What gets rewarded is repeated, so the seagulls will congregate around areas where people have fed them before. In built-up tourist locations, this can be very off-putting. Seagulls will also adapt and start stealing food from people. Indeed, I've seen the TikToks. A caller says, on the subject of the increase of drink costs, bars are now charging $3.50 for a bottle of water. $3.50 for a bottle of water. But I suppose it's not just the water you're paying for. It's the service, it's the light, it's the heat, it's the seat. Maybe it's the music. I'm not saying I agree with it fully, but I'm saying that's the argument that might be made. Hi, Greg. Went out for a night during a festival. Couldn't believe the expensive drink out. €150 gone and nothing to show for it. Not even a hangover. I'll be drinking at home from now on. Thanks, Mary. Loving your show as usual. Thank you very much indeed. Greg, did my HGV test in the town years ago. Now, when someone says in the town, you know they're talking about Letterkenny because it's the only town that exists for some. I'm looking at Caroline in the town. No, I go to different towns. No, it's all right, Caroline, sorry. But anyway, that's fine. It's not something that bothers me at all. Hi, Greg. Did my HGV test in Letterkenny years ago, and coming down from Gortleybrae to Oatfield roundabout, there's a yellow box. Traffic was stopped at the red light and I came down and nicely took an okay back to the test centre. Sorry, took it nicely and then trucked back to the test centre. I failed because I didn't stop first before moving off because the stop sign was turned sideways to me and I didn't see it. Wrote to council about this, but no response, and didn't even fix the sign. Got it. Hi, Greg. Typically, the excise duty on a pint of 43%. ABV beer is 54%. The minister and non-alcoholic beer is not liable for any excise duty. Alcohol beverages are subject to the standard rate of VAT, currently 23%. Therefore, the profit made on non-alcohol drinks is massive. Thank you for that. Puts a bit more meat on the bone there. Right, I'm going to take a break and then we're going to discuss whether or not there should be by-elections. Do you think it's one of the issues that's been referred to the Electoral Commission to discuss. So what do you think? Should by-elections be scrapped? Of course, we had a huge controversy and a drawn-out situation and legal action taken to force a by-election. But do you think they should be gone altogether? Former election candidate Declan Meehan is going to be joining us after this break to discuss it. We'll get his views. Now, Minister Dara O'Brien has made or asked a number of questions or referred a couple of issues to the Electoral Commission, I think their phrase is. Anyway, we'll get to what it's called in a second. But amongst them is an examination of the possibility of replacing by-elections with an alternative list system, one where a candidate would be required to provide a list of people who could be co-opted to fill a vacancy should it arise. Such a system is in operation for European elections, and bringing it into the Dáil elections would remove the need for by-elections, Mr. O'Brien told the Commission. Let's get Declan Meehan's views. He's a former candidate in the local council elections. What do you think? Are you of the view that... Good morning, sorry, Declan. I've just lost my manners. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good to have you on the programme. Okay. There's one of those switches that is on and the other three are off behind you and it's doing my head in. But anyway, thank you. sorry, for most people in Radio Land don't want. I'm on about... Declan's joining me via video. All right, what's your view on scrapping by-elections?
I'd be opposed to it. My opinion is very much that by-elections are a crucial part of our democratic process. When a vacancy arises in the Dáil, the normal course of action is for a by-election to be held. We've seen examples of when government delay as much as possible at times the time which to hold the by-election, usually because they're worried that they won't be able to hold the seat if the vacancy that's arisen comes from a government TD. Over the past 10 years, there's been 11 by-elections. 9 of them have gone to opposition parties and 2 have been held by the government parties of the day. So I guess you would expect it to come from a government party, particularly maybe from Minister Dara O'Brien, to try and scrap by-elections. But I think that throwing by-elections out and replacing with an alternative list system devalues the electorate's participation in the democratic process.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting thing to even propose. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it does the minister any suggestions by even putting this forward, because particularly if someone loses a seat in controversial circumstances, you know, the public will want to have their say and maybe, you know, punish them for that rather than seeing someone perhaps with the same moral compass and political ideology just slide into that. It doesn't sound democratic to me.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it would be unthinkable that in a Dáil by-election where someone had to resign because of corruption, scandal or misconduct, that someone else from that party would be able to hold on to that seat regardless. I mean, by-elections are a great barometer and a great measure of how an electorate thinks within a constituency. And it's their opportunity to react to changing circumstances from the last general election. So again, by-elections are crucially important for that reason.
So what's your view? Obviously, we can't have by-elections at council level. Do you have any views on the whole co-option process? Because that too can be interesting in that, you know, someone who is stepping down by choice might do it a year out from election to get someone in, to give them a year at it, and then they can stand for election themselves. I know it really is kind of a separate issue, but it kind of is similar at the same time as well. Do you think maybe what we see at council level is a perfect example as to why we need to retain by-elections at national level?
I do, yeah. I think co-option, I think, is a very, I suppose, cynically practical kind of a measure in terms of council by-elections, but it kind of speaks to the volume that central government doesn't really value council elections in the same way that it does Dáil elections, and yet they're very important for local government. And so when we have a co-option system in place, while I suppose it saves the electorate and the taxpayer money in terms of not having to run an election on a small scale within an electoral area, to replace someone on the county council or city councils, it still kind of devalues, again, the kind of democratic process whereby the custom is simply to allow the family of the person who's resigning, particularly after a death, to put someone forward to take that seat instead. And all parties, including independents, kind of buy into that system of co-option whereby it has to be, obviously, voted on by the entire council. But I mean, by-elections would be ideal in that situation. I mean, we see it in the European Parliament. That's probably the system at the minute where there is an alternative list, which is what Dara Bryan's suggesting that the Commission look into for Dáil elections. So most recent example would be when Mairead McGuinness moved into her commissioner role and Colm Markey was on her alternate list. But the people weren't afforded an opportunity to vote on that. And that's a very, very high profile and a very important position at the European Parliament level.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that too is, you know, there's great efforts being made by MEPs and, you know, staff in certain areas or all over the place, to try and, you know, talk about the importance of Europe. And
yeah,
you know, I that's counterintuitive because it's like, well, how can it be? It can't be that important if you just, you know, airdrop someone into a position. You know what I mean? So, but then again, they might be concerned as to how many people might turn out for a by-election and how much it might cost.
But I mean, how many people turn out for a by-election is up to the people. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. That's, I mean, 37% of voters didn't turn up for the 2020 election. And that was their choice to do so. And that's also part of the democratic process is turnout. And as you say, you know, there's been great strides made and great efforts by MEPs and by European institutions to try and address the democratic deficit where people don't feel a direct link to the European Parliament. And the European Parliament now has an enhanced role within the mechanisms of the EU. And yet to not have a by-election when a vacancy arises sort of diminishes that and kind of undoes that good work and the people are trying to and have been trying to undo over the past number of years. So I think it really is about the people's connection to the democratic institutions. So Minister Dara O'Brien, his suggestion for looking into scrapping by-elections for the Dáil would be a most unwelcome development in this area.
What they're also going to be looking at lowering the voting age. Do you have a view on that?
Yeah, I mean, the voting age, this is something that's been going on for years. As far back as 2013, one of the first constitutional conventions recommended that a referendum be held so that people could decide whether or not to lower the voting age to 16. Another constitutional convention, Citizens Assembly, in 2018 voted by 80% to lower the age to 16. There's been a number of moves. There's been a number of private members' bills, both in the Shannon and the Dáil, from Sinn Féin senators and also from Donegal's own Thomas Pringle, to lower the voting age and to have a referendum based on those constitutional convention and citizen assembly reports. The European Parliament also passed a report back in 2015 to lower the age to 16 for European parliamentary elections. And the whole idea behind that is to engage younger voters sooner rather than later.
See, I don't think we've ever... I always feel, Declan, that that conversation really comes down to, you know, parties or individuals that might benefit from the votes of the 16 and 70-year-olds because they might be maybe more liberal or they might be, you know, and then those that maybe would seek out a more conservative vote are afraid that that could be damaging to them. I don't recall ever having a debate on, you know, the benefits or negatives outside of that, if that makes sense, you know, and what it might do or what how it might change the political landscape or what might come from it or what might be the advantage or indeed what might be the disadvantage. Have we ever really had that debate outside as to who might benefit from this cohort voting?
Not really. I mean, the National Youth Council of Ireland have done a lot of work on this, and it's been kind of a policy of theirs for the past 10, if not 15 years to campaign for a lower voting age to 16. And their, I suppose, reasons for campaigning for that are that, you know, a lot of the decisions that are taken in terms of taxation, benefits, whatever else, you know, they're going to impact 16 and 17 year olds for maybe 10 and 20 years. You look at the bank bailout, for example, which impacts all of us for such a long time, and people who weren't able to vote at that stage. So it's about giving people a voice on issues that will affect them. The other argument to be made is that, you know, you're able to have a family from the age of 16 and to get married. You're able to consent to medical procedures. You're also able to engage in employment. So, you know, I guess the reason, or, you know, why not? Why shouldn't they be able to vote at that stage? I guess there is obviously a conservatism within the established parties around lowering that age, because you look at any polls and you'll see that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are not very popular with the under 30s, never mind the under 18s. So you can imagine why there might be reticence there to change it. But this particular thing that's been asked of the Electoral Commission to look into under the voting age was actually a Green initiative under the Programme for Government. So again, I guess you see, like, this is the nature of coalition government. You have a number of tasks being put forward for the Electoral Commission to research and consider, and they come from different ends of the spectrum within that coalition.
Yeah, I'd say nothing will change and they'll just have a chat. But anyway, it gives us an opportunity to have a chat. Declan, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. Okay, that is Declan Meehan there, who is a former candidate in the local council election. So, A, do you believe by-elections should be scrapped in favour of a list system? And B, would you like to see 16 and 17-year-olds get a vote? 086-6025000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. Greg, re-local elections, do you realise that to check if you are still registered to vote, that you have to insert your PPS number to get access? Is this not just another way of bringing us closer to a national ID card? The PPS number is supposed to only be used by the Department of Social Protection, although they've called it destruction, and I suspect it is not a typo. I find it hard to comment on that or whatever. I'll throw it out there because I don't really... I had to get one of those national ID cards for something or other. I don't know what it was, which involved your PPS numbers on it. And I don't really have a great protection of my PPS number. So I don't really get the concern about your PPS number or a national ID card, for an example. I don't have a concern about that. So it's hard for me to... So just throw it out to the listeners and see if you agree or disagree. A caller says simply, Greg, yes, there should be by-elections held. Now, can anyone answer the question as to why these people cannot be deported after completing their sentence? And that goes for anyone who's given asylum and then breaks the law in America. Us and a lot of other countries, you would be deported after serving your sentence. This would be a great deterrent. Another, that fella is sending nude photos in the first place, is all what is wrong with societies. These dating sites are rotten. And just as it relates to that first text, the person, if you're referring to this sextortion, they were not living in this country. They were outside the country. Regarding tattoos, I often wonder why people feel the need to deface their own bodies. Is it an indication of low self-esteem? Personally, I think tattoos are ugly and are in no way attractive. I understand that some people like them, but some of us are equally entitled not to like them. And you do that, really, I suppose, by not putting them on your body rather than maybe criticising other people or questioning their self-esteem. And I mean that with absolute respect, but that's what personal choice is, isn't it? You decide what you put on your body or you don't. But if someone decides to have a tattoo, free choice then is not you sort of saying, well, you're doing it because you've got low self-esteem. But anyway, it is well known that parental alienation contributes to up to 10% of Irish suicide. So why are there no special services to help them? Another caller says, in my uneducated opinion, I can't see the misogyny of the Catholic Church ever allowing female priests. Sure, weren't the 12 apostles all men, according to the four men whose gospels are used at every mass? And yes, I'm a practicing Catholic. That comes in from Rita. Rita, great to have you on board. Thank you so much for your comment this morning. A caller says, as it relates to where are the Gardaí, I think we have the fourth, fifth highest rate of Gardaí in Donegal per head of population. A caller says, Gardaí are obviously behind desks or in cars. They're not on the beat. The strategy of this government is that Gardaí react to incidences by looking for camera footage and the population to supply evidence to them. That comes in from Daniel. In my opinion, Southern media are slow to report or not at all on sectarian abuse by band members parading in the north. Brush it under the carpet effort, perhaps. Certainly not the case here. If someone rings in or sends a text in or what have you and wants to discuss that, we discuss it. And I believe the incident, if I'm correct, that you're referring to was covered on the news here. Hi, Greg. Good to have you back. Thank you. It's great to be back. Concerning DBS, has anyone who has... this is defective block scheme. Has anyone who has had application number applied and proceeded through scheme been contacted by council regarding the enhanced scheme? Surely there should be informing us all on what the next stage will need, require. The scheme has gone backwards by 5 years in this caller's opinion. It's like snakes and ladders. Keep the pressure on, lad. You're our only voice. Well, as much as I can do, I will do. Caller asks, how did RTE run up debts of 90 million? Was there no oversight of their spending or the competence of Dee Forbes? Surely the crazy salaries being paid to third-rate presenters was a cause for concern. The Director General seems to have had an open checkbook. Now that the crows have come home to roost, she has, like the swallows, flown off to sunnier climes with a suitcase full of our licence fee money. She won't be getting any more of mine. I agree that RTE does not need Ryan Tubridy. If the test card was being shown for those 2 hours, it would be the most watched programme of the week. Okay. Mairead joins us on the programme now. Hiya, Mairead. How are you keeping?
Good, thank you, Greg. Thanks.
Now, your daughter, and I've been through this myself over the course of the last 6 or 7 months, your daughter was due to get a driving test in June, then it slipped back to July, then it was August. You have checked again the estimator, and now it's September. It's a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And just that, I don't know, has anybody else got this problem? I was talking to the driving instructor, and they say that there is no driving people doing the test now in Letterkenny at the minute.
Mm.
They're off the past 2 weeks and they're away training somebody, and it's going to be another 7 weeks. Just my daughter's going to college. There's no public transport to it. It's going to be a 2.5 hour drive for me down the Sunday evening to take her there. 2.5 hours then for me to come back. Then again, maybe on a Thursday evening or a Friday. Just wondering, is there anybody else in the same boat just waiting away on tests and can't get it?
And it puts a lot of it puts extra pressure on her as well, the pressure to pass, you know, with every month that slips by. I know Lee, my son's in his case, it went from May, June, and eventually he sat the test in late July. Have you considered switching test centres? I wonder, does that work? I mean, obviously, Letterkenny, there'd be huge demand. Have you considered Donegal Town or Buncrana? Or maybe if you did switch, you'd go to the back of the list. We don't know. Maybe that's what listeners can help us with today.
Yeah, I don't know. Just in driving instructor said that she thinks that there's they think that there's a waiting list everywhere
right
at the minute. It's supposed to say that the RSA doesn't like bad publicity. I suppose we're just fed up waiting.
Yeah,
every
for
time
sure
you go in and you look. And it's another date, so that's just all. Just wondered, was there anybody else in the same boat?
All right, well, we'll put it out there, Mairead, and I'm sure she's ready to go. You'd be very keen to see her driving, because you say you're in rural Donegal, she's going to college in Cavan, there's no bus route, and that would mean a great deal of inconvenience for both you and her. So Mairead, we'll put it out to the listeners, see what they have to say, if anyone's got any advice, but it is a bit of a nightmare situation, and I hope it gets resolved soon. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. So Mairead's daughter was to get her driving test in June in Letterkenny, then it went to July, then it went to August. Now they've checked the estimator and it is September, and the daughter needs the car to head to college in Cavan for obvious reasons. There's no local transport there. Right, a caller says, I am a Catholic all my life, but the Catholic Church is the most corrupt religion in the world. All they care about is money, 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 and most of the parish priests still think they rule the people of their parish, and this is taking place. Why? Because of the people they have in their committees. All of those people are yes people. Is that fair? I've never really come across that much myself. Now, I'm not saying I'm a regular attendee, don't get me wrong, but that wouldn't necessarily be a church that I recognise. Okay, we want your views on that and everything else, of course, that we're discussing this morning, or indeed for you to raise your own issues. 086 6025000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. It is the 9 till noon show. We'll be back with the next hour after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.